don't need no education.
Welcome to Education Nation, where we tackle the biggest issues in American education. Your host is the headmaster of Liberty Classical Academy, Rebecca Hagstrom, along with co-host Mark Durkin. School is now in session.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us here on Education Nation. I am your host, Rebecca Hagstrom, and it's a privilege to join you again this Saturday morning. And I'm joined in studio by Mark Durkin, my co-host and executive producer of the show.
And a good morning and a happy new year to you, Rebecca.
Yes, and we've been out of the studio, played a couple of reruns the last few weeks.
Yes.
And I have to say, it's been a whirlwind couple of holiday weeks.
Yes, it has.
Caught the ugly bug at the end of the vacation time that we had at our school, and so I'm a little bit hoarse voice today, but hopefully I get through without any coughing attacks, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right. Lots of water.
But we hope everybody had a wonderful holiday season celebrating Christmas and New Year's, and ready to be back at work here in January, and best wishes for 2018 to all of our listeners. And we are going to cover a topic that we've actually been wanting to cover for quite a while, and it has to do with concussions. We realize that across America, kids of all ages participate in a wide range of contact sports. And for many years, athletes were viewed as extracurricular, or athletics, excuse me, were viewed as extracurricular activities. And contrast that with today, where commitment to athletics are really taken much more seriously. High schools and colleges treat athletics like big business, and sports are now viewed as a career path for many aspiring athletes.
That's right, Rebecca. Universities across the country are increasingly pursuing pre-high school students with scholarships to attend colleges through participation in athletics. You know, just in 2017 alone, one Division I college football coach offered scholarships to students in the 6th and 7th grades.
Wow.
But see, not to be outdone
now. That seems a little crazy.
Oh, it is. Yeah, it's really become just a business venture. In fact, the University of Illinois, they recently offered a football scholarship to a 10-year-old Pop Warner football star.
Wow.
So as an increasing number of children are making it their life ambition to play contact sports, more information is simultaneously available to us concerning CTE. The acronym stands for Chronic Traumatic Encephalopathy, which is a progressive degenerative disease of the brain found in people with a history of repetitive brain trauma, often found in athletes that play contact sports. The debilitating condition has been in the news headlines the last few years, as it was found present in the autopsies of many former professional football players.
Mm-hmm. Yes, becoming much more well-known in the football realm. And in stating the obvious, head impacts that lead to concussions in contact sports continues to be a growing epidemic among our young athletes. So when left undetected or not recovered from correctly, the results can produce long-term brain damage and may even prove fatal. But what are some of the dangers that are associated with suffering brain injuries in contact sports? What signs should parents look for if they suspect their child has suffered a concussion? How can parents help their children along in the treatment process as they seek to heal from these injuries? Dr. Brian Kress is joining us in studio this morning to discuss this very important and timely topic. Dr. Kress is a pediatrician at the Stillwater Medical Group and has been practicing medicine for 24 years. And he has had extensive training and experience with concussions. Thanks so much for joining us today, Dr. Kress.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Yeah, and I just have to say, Dr. Kress is a longtime family friend of ours, and actually treated my children. One of my sons actually had a double concussion two days in a row, and it was pretty scary. He ended up in the hospital for a few days and had some memory issues, and we had to really take it easy for a little while with him. He was about in fifth grade, I think, when it happened, and we were thankful to have you there to help us through that experience. So anyway, we're going to jump right in with some questions for you today, Dr. Kress, and feel free to expound on them as much as you want, and we'll look forward to hearing your responses. So let's just jump right in with the first question here for you, Brian. Our concussion may be caused by a blow, bump, or jolt to the head, or by any fall or hit that jars the brain. Would you describe for our listeners what exactly happens to the normal functions of the brain when a young person suffers a concussion?
Absolutely.
That's one of the surprising things to most people is that it doesn't necessarily have to be a hit right to the brain. Mm-hmm. It can be something that jars the brain through a concussive kind of wave of energy from when a body gets hit in another place. Okay. A concussion is caused by the brain rotating or banging against the inside of the skull. Mm-hmm. after a blow. Mm-hmm. What that does then is it kind of fires a multi-layered neurometabolic cascade of depolarization or discharging of electricity in the brain and the nerves. Mm-hmm. This is followed by a buildup of lactic acid, and just like our muscles after we work out, a decrease in blood flow, which then in impairs glucose or sugar delivery to the brain, which is the brain's favorite food.
Mm-hmm.
Then as the brain starves of blood flow and sugar, then it impairs function and the neurotransmission gets compromised.
Wow, that's pretty interesting, isn't it? I mean, when you stop and think about what you just described there, that's a lot of pieces of the puzzle that are happening that really cause the lack of function, isn't it?
It really is. You know, I kind of consider the brain maybe as one of the last frontiers of understanding. You know, mm-hmm. we know a lot about the liver and the heart and all that, but you know, really how the nerves connect and how they interact really is I think, you know, still a big black box out there.
Right.
But the interesting thing about a concussion, they're really, at least right now, there's no clinically available or easily available testing for concussions. There's,
sure.
there's some talk of some biologic markers or some functional MRI scans, but mm-hmm. those really are just for really done at this point in research
right.
capacities. They're
right.
really not done in anybody's mm-hmm. clinic that I'm aware of.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a functional or clinical diagnosis, not a there's no structural abnormalities or damage. Once,
right.
once there's brain damage, then that's a whole different...
That's a whole different realm. That's
yeah.
the traumatic brain injury, and that's what I used to work with a long time ago at St. Paul Ramsey.
Now, the brain, yeah. now, it basically is floating within the skull, is that correct? I mean, as it floats, when it hits like the inside of the skull, I mean,
right.
does it bend or does it just suffer a bruise on the very direct point of contact? I mean, how? You know.
Well, yeah, I think it's kind of your brain is kind of floating in the cerebral spinal
right.
fluid, and it's a fairly thin layer. But there's both injury as the brain hits the skull on the front side, and then there's kind of this reactionary blow as it recoils, kind of a whiplash type of thing. So
sure.
so there's you can both have injuries both where the initial injury is as well as where it rebounds and bounces mm-hmm. off against the other side of the brain. But
it's called the counter coup.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. The coup and counter coup, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So there's but with concussions, I think there's more, oftentimes more rotational. There's twisting and turning, which kind of shears. I feel like it shears some of the neurons and again depolarizes them and kind of messes up all the blood flow and sugar metabolism.
You know, it really helps to hear you explain that in detail, just because we've had some students at our school who have had concussions, and then with lingering difficulties as a result of that concussion. And it's hard to really fathom why that would be when you consider that a concussion is considered to be less severe, you know, than a traumatic brain injury,
mm-hmm.
a more permanent sort. And so when you describe the detail of what's really happening in a concussion and the inability for the blood flow to be as proper and for glucose levels to be at optimum levels, you can then see why you would end up maybe having some lingering results where it takes a while for all of that to kind of go back into...
To reset,
yeah, to go back into the proper flow.
Well, it sure does. And just like some people recover from a twisted ankle faster than others,
right.
some people recover more slowly from a brain injury.
Yeah.
But it's a very unique situation for each person.
Yeah, for sure. So a concussion injury can involve someone losing consciousness, but the majority of the concussion injuries involve no loss of consciousness. Is either one of these scenarios more dangerous than the other?
Well, in the past, we used to grade concussions on a mild, moderate, severe, or 1, 2, 3 kind of scale, mm-hmm. and then based on our judgments of the mechanism of injury, how it happened, and the events after the injury, and then the description of those events, we would then classify them in mm-hmm. that classification process, and then develop a return to play protocol based on mm-hmm. that or recommendations. Now it's a yes or no answer. You either had a concussion or you didn't.
So
certainly the more severe injuries generally are going to give you more commonly a loss of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are going to be more severe. There's also situations where people are awake and alert at the scene, but they have amnesia. And so if you ask the patient, mm-hmm. they'll say they've been knocked out, but everybody around them saw that their eyes are still open and even if they were talking.
Mm.
But it's not only you have to interview the patient, but people around the patient to realize really what happened.
Yeah, right. Because I suppose there still is a big difference, as you say. If there really was a loss of consciousness, there probably is at least a risk for a little bit more severe injury.
They're right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, there's going to be more energy that has been transmitted to the brain, more injury to the mm-hmm. brain. And you have to be more cautious with evaluating and managing those patients.
Sure, mm-hmm. sure. Interesting.
Yeah, you talked about events that are really key and crucial in terms of the recovery process. We'll talk about that more next week when you join us in studio in terms of the nursing back to optimal health. But in the meantime, I want to spend some time discussing different symptoms that a child may experience after suffering a concussion. And before we do so, could you tell us how many hours from the initial blow to the head can symptoms from a concussion really begin to surface?
Well, concussion management, diagnosis and management, from what I've seen in my reading and going to meetings and conferences and talking to sports medicine docs and neurologists, it's really there's a lot of personal opinions and a lot of style that people play into this. So the symptoms can be present immediately with when they get your bell rung and you're a little dizzy coming back to the huddle in football.
Mm-hmm.
It can be a matter of several hours or a day or so. But I think the quote that I've heard consistently is soon after an injury, and that's mm-hmm. there's a lot of interpretation with that, but it's probably mm-hmm. within a day or two, I suppose.
Okay.
I think there's a lot of other things that look like concussions. For example, you know, again, a big hit can give you a whiplash type injury, and you can have headaches that show up a couple, 3 days later. But
right.
is that really a concussion or not?
Mm-hmm.
Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, when we talk about symptoms, we can break that down into several categories. There are physical symptoms that a child may experience. There's also cognitive, emotional, sleeping pattern changes. Why don't we start off by talking about maybe what some of the common physical symptoms are to one who experiences a concussion?
Sure, sure. Yeah, some of the most common things are certainly headaches. People are dizzy and fatigued. They will feel slowed down. They're walking through molasses. They're drowsy. Sometimes have difficulty with concentration.
Mm-hmm.
Surprisingly, some of the least common symptoms, things like vomiting, there's not a particularly common in the all the symptoms associated with concussion, numbness and tingling, that would certainly lead you to believe that maybe there's some other more significant injuries.
Sure.
They're not just a soft tissue injury, I guess, or something more significant. Sometimes there's some mood changes, some sadness, increased emotions, but those are not the ones we see most frequently.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting that you bring that up, because with a lot of people that are suffering from CTE, as they give kind of their testimony about what's going on in their lives, they talk about dealing with depression and like with outbursts of anger. And so maybe that's not just associated with the concussion or the repetitive concussion.
Yeah, I think with CTE, and I certainly don't know as much about that, but the CTE is probably is more of a function of many, many concussions or many, many micro concussions, maybe even. And then at that point, you're actually starting to see some changes of the brain, some scarring in one sort of or the other.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, we talked about physical symptoms. How about some of the cognitive symptoms that might come along?
Sure. So kids will, along with the feeling slowed down and drowsy, they have a hard time concentrating. the bright lights in the school will exacerbate some of their symptoms. But they just have much more difficulty with processing information.
Okay. Mm-hmm. How about emotional symptoms? I'm sorry. Go ahead, Rebecca.
Well, I was just going to say this is some of the things that we're actually seeing with some of the students in our school that have had concussions or repetitive concussions that it really can affect their schoolwork, and one girl actually wore sunglasses in class for a while to help with the bright lights. Reduce the amount of work that she was doing for a period of time until she could have the ability to concentrate well enough to be able to process quickly enough to be able to complete all the work. And this is a very bright girl. So it is amazing how much of an effect it can actually have.
Well, like a lot of things in life, I think it's like a spider web. You know, you've got, you mentioned sleep disturbance. So kids can't sleep. They have trouble with daytime drowsiness. They have trouble falling asleep. They have trouble staying asleep. If they're not getting good rest, that by itself can cause problems with attention, focus, mm-hmm. and schoolwork. Then you add in some of the other symptoms, the dizziness, the headaches, it's very distracting. And it really kind of, really mm-hmm. everything kind of like a tidal wave kind of comes down upon these kids.
Right, mm-hmm. right. Mm-hmm.
How about the emotional symptoms?
Yeah, that's, you mentioned some of the teariness, the aggressiveness, irritability. You know, really too much of that, though, is you have to be careful that that's not just from a concussion, that there's some other kind of injury, like sometimes there's bleeding around the brain called a subdural hematoma, or actually a contusion of the brain itself. If there's too much emotion, I think it's you just have to be careful that you write it off all, too much to just the concussion itself.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Well, and I know that is one of the hallmarks of head injury is to have changes in your personality or exacerbation of your previous personality in ways that are kind of surprising or inconsistent with what you typically were. So mm-hmm. I can see where that would maybe be more than just a concussion. Mm-hmm. That is kind of your point. That,
yep. Exactly.
Right, right. Okay. Well, studies show that less than 50% of high school athletes will report their concussions because they feel pressured not to. So just how dangerous is it for a child to play sports with a concussion?
Well, this whole reporting thing is really interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some testing, some pre-activity testing the kids will perform called IMPACT testing, and I'm going to blank on what IMPACT stands for. It's an acronym, but it's a computerized test that kids will take. Now, the problem with getting this testing is that when kids are growing and developing, you sometimes have to repeat it as early as every 3 to 6 months because mm-hmm. their brains and bodies are changing so rapidly. Mm-hmm. So sometimes like an eighth grader, ninth grader, if you get a pre-hockey physical with an IMPACT test, you know, if they're going through puberty rapidly, gee whiz, halfway through the season, it's invalid.
Right.
I mean, people argue how valid those are anyway to help manage a concussion, but mm-hmm. it's invalid to begin with. Now, I've heard rumors, or it's been talked about in conferences, that high school students and college students, they're not dumb. They know about what these mm-hmm. IMPACT tests mean and what these mm-hmm. things, so they will. I've heard rumors of kids faking the testing.
You know, oh, my goodness.
Kind of throwing the test to get...
So that they can keep playing.
Right. They get mm-hmm. a kind of a lower score. And honestly, whatever that is, I'm not sure. A lower score. And so then when they do get a concussion, they can return to play more quickly, which
is, so
there's kind of pre-injury, kind of shenanigans,
baseline, I guess. Yeah.
And then afterwards, kids don't want to be taken out of the game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so they will buck up, and you know, there's a lot of sports that kind of honor toughness like that.
Yeah.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
There's again, even I was at a meeting once where a sports medicine doc played a video of a play in football, and the wide receiver went out and caught the ball and just got blown up and mm-hmm. stumbled up and kind of made his way back to the huddle, and he had just told us about how getting your bell rung mm-hmm. was you have to be taken out to the sidelines to be evaluated, and then he said, "But this kid is okay." He made it back and explained it. Well, then I don't know, a minute later, he said, "Oh, by the way, that was my son."
Oh, my goodness.
Thought, whoa.
You're just, kidding.
Yeah, so it's really...
Wow.
There's so many layers. So the students don't report, the parents don't want to report.
Even if you're a sports medicine doctor.
Right.
But a culture in a lot of sports, though, too. I mean, even especially back in the 70s and 80s and even the 90s, if you had your bell rung, you went over to the sideline, what's your name? What city are you playing in? Go back in, you're fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was it. And
yeah.
It was not drawn out and nearly investigated to the extent that we see it being done
right.
to today.
Right.
Yeah, I think we have some standardized sideline protocols,
yes.
but you're right.
And they're quite extensive now, too.
Yep. Yeah.
But they still have to actually do them. I mean,
right. they've got to pass the protocol.
Right.
They have to
theoretically.
But I'm
right.
just saying if the kid, it sounds like not all the kids actually end up on the sidelines.
Right.
You know, if you go
right.
by this example that Dr. Kress just gave us, yeah, they stayed in the game, even though he got his bell rung.
Right. Right.
So, yeah, very, very interesting. Well, and I know there's pressure from all sides. It's not just I think in most cases at the high school level, it's the students' own pressure. They want to be in the game.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure that there's pressure from parents and coaches and what have you, especially if it's a really good player. Nobody wants to lose that good player off their team.
It's an important game.
It's an important game, or they've got playoffs coming up. Yeah, it's a balancing act.
It is. Your initial question about how dangerous it is, it really kind of depends on what stage, if they've had a concussion, what stage of recovery they're in.
Right.
You know, it will if they've had a concussion, it slows down their reaction time and their protection time, and so they're like you mentioned with your son,
mm-hmm.
the second injury may not have been as significant had he been able to protect himself.
Right.
It just kind of slows everything down.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. That's a really interesting point. Well, student athletes who are risk experiencing second impact syndrome as a result of playing sports with a concussion. Can you explain for our listeners what this syndrome is and what the physical consequences can be, even if the head blow would be deemed minor? Kind of like you were just saying, actually.
Right. Yeah. So second impact syndrome really started off as a relatively controversial thing. It came out of a couple of anecdotal or case reports that came kind of relatively close together several years ago. But it refers to either death or severe neurologic injury that's attributable to massive swelling of the brain to those who sustain a second head injury prior to the full recovery of a concussion that they've already occurred.
Okay.
Again, it's controversial. It's possibly due to that inherent ability to protect themselves
mm-hmm.
The second time around. But I hear a lot of debate about that itself. It's a hot button issue for sure,
right.
And whether it's really real or is it just the second injury was so much more devastating than the first. It's
sure that's hard to separate.
Oh my goodness, mm-hmm. It really is.
Mm-hmm. Now, is that something that's being talked a lot about at the professional football level as well, or not so much? Is this kind of limited more to our K-12 sports? Do you know?
Well,
in college.
So I always tell people when they come to see me, you get a lot of my opinions.
Yeah.
And so
well, that's what we have you here for, right, is for your opinions.
Right, I guess. But if you really go through, and we'll talk about the return to play protocol next time, but it's really a minimum of 5 days.
Wow.
Right, 5 or 6 days, a minimum. And so when I see, a professional football team playing every week.
Yeah.
I don't know how you can clear somebody going through that return to play protocol, which is really pretty standard, no matter how old you are, where you're
really?
At.
Really? Okay.
I don't know how you clear somebody in 6 or 7 days.
Right, right.
Consistently.
Right.
So
that's very interesting.
On Sundays, I keep my mouth shut.
Right. Well,
people have heard that enough.
Right. Well, and obviously at that level, we're talking a lot more money is at stake with these players. And so that's why I asked the question. I'm wondering, are they as upfront about these issues at the professional level as they are at the K-12 and the college level? Sounds like maybe not.
I have my suspicions, that's
right,
for sure.
Right, right.
And that's really a double-edged sword because, you talk about how much money is really at stake with these games. But the problem is that once the career is all said and done, and these athletes are experiencing these symptoms over the course of time, then they bring lawsuits against the league, mm-hmm. and they're having to dole out money mm-hmm. later on in the future. So I'm just kind of curious, not that this has to be answered today, but just curious that at some point, that K through 12 in college, in professional sports, if there is going to be a very specific set of guidelines and they cannot be violated for this, you know, protection of what it could cost financially mm-hmm. down the road later on.
Mm-hmm. Very possibly.
You know, one sport that I've honestly wondered about in terms of, you know, concussions is soccer, because players are always using their head to headbutt the ball. Now, we know that the ball itself is not heavy, but I mean, there's a pretty good velocity on the ball when it's moving as it makes contact with the head, and the soccer player, you know, jerks their head forward to make contact with the ball. So can a headbutt of a soccer ball produce a concussion? And if not, does the constant head contact with the ball produce an accumulative damage to the brain over time?
Well, right. I think it certainly can. As we've seen with a lot of different injuries, it varies dramatically on how much of an injury, how heavy a blow it takes to cause somebody to have a concussion. Several years ago, there was a headband being sold for soccer players.
I remember that, yeah. And the kids didn't want to use it.
Well, yeah, mm-hmm. nobody did. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure it's still the energy still transmitted into your brain, and I don't know where it would go other than that ring around your head.
Well, there was actually something on that headband. It wasn't just a headband. It had like a maybe 3-inch long by 1.5 inch or 2 inches wide. Like, I don't know what it was. It was like a plastic thing. It was something that I think they thought was supposed to kind of deflect that energy. Yeah. But I see what you're saying. I don't know
whether it was not cool, whether it was...
No, it was not cool. I had soccer player kids, so I know that they did not want to wear it.
Yeah. The ball, man, my goodness. Some people can really kick that ball.
Yeah.
But I think there's some, like with car accidents, you know, if you know it's coming, you can kind of steel up a little bit and kind of brace a little bit. And I think that probably plays a role in how somebody responds to an injury and your likelihood to getting a concussion. Certainly in my practice, I see probably more kids with concussions from soccer who get a blow from on the side of the head that they never saw coming, rather than going up to head something or
contact with another player type.
Well, the ball comes from their side, or when they're going up to head. A ball with somebody else and they bang heads together,
sure.
But it's a kind of an unexpected blow rather than a ball coming at them that they can get ready for.
Mm-hmm. Clinch up with. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Do you know if there's any truth? I just heard recently that there is a difference in males and females in terms of the ability to absorb a head blow, mm-hmm. not blow, but a for the soccer, the headers that they do, that for some reason the female head is not as... This just sounds absurd to me, but I did just hear this recently.
Yeah,
I want to know if there's any truth to this.
I don't know. I don't know the base for that, but I could speculate that maybe a male's bones are a little thicker.
That's what they were saying.
Yeah.
Now that you say that, yes.
And their muscle mass around their neck is going to be generally bigger and stronger.
Okay.
To be able to brace for that. That's
what it was. I didn't remember the whole piece of it, but you are right. That's exactly what they were saying. So I guess that does make sense. To a degree, but
in medicine, one thing I've learned is you just never expect the unexpected, and sometimes we have a hard time explaining differences mm-hmm. between the genders or whatever. But it's fast. There's never a dull moment.
Yeah, exactly.
That's for sure.
Well, and I do know that concussions, you know, they cross all ages, all boundaries, and we see a lot of them. And as I told you at the beginning of the show, my son experienced that with Dr. Kress a number of years ago now, and it's pretty scary when you see a child, especially your own, that is suffering with memory problems and that sort of thing. So it's a scary deal. Well, we are very glad to have had you on the show today, Brian, and we are going to have you back next week. So I hope our listeners will tune in next week again as we talk about some of the recoveries from concussions and kind of how to deal with it going forward. But it's been a very informative show today. So thank you for joining us. Thank you to our listeners for joining us, and we'll see you next week on Education Nation.